soccer matters.
Quick shot, score! The US with Dempsey!
For Fabregas, who looks for Iniesta, who's onside! Spain score!
Entonces el centro.
Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. Hey, don't forget, it's Twitter Glenn Davis Sock, and you'll get all the information on the show, also at Soccer Matters GD. Big thank you to FM Kitchen and Bar. Tremendous place to go watch soccer games, craft cocktails, fresh food, free Wi-Fi over there. They got a beautiful outdoor area. It really is like a beer garden. It's FM Kitchen and Bar. Now, they have two locations, 1112 Shepherd Drive. You go over there, you see my friend Jason. It's a great spot. You can get the craft cocktail you want. For me, it's usually a great gin and tonic with good Fever Tree tonic water. And then the fresh food. It's FM Kitchen and Bar. They've also got another location down in the Montrose area. And that is basically right next to Velvet Tacos. And it's right near Montrose and Westheimer. Big thank you to FM Kitchen and Bar. And they help bring us our next interview from American Soccer Now. Very up on the American soccer player, both here in the United States and abroad. He's Brian Chiaretta. Brian, thank you very much for coming on from the great state of New Jersey.
Not only the great state, the great city of Morristown. And it's always a pleasure to be on, Glenn. Thank you. Yeah,
great to have you on, Brian. Okay, so let's flash back to 2018 and not qualifying for the World Cup on the senior men's side for the U.S. Obviously, that accelerated opportunity for these young players. I get the sense we're really in an unprecedented time when it comes to depth of soccer players at the international level.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and there's so many things trending upward for the United States. It's not just the players we have abroad. It's the domestic players are improving. MLS is sending better players to Europe. Even the players that stay here are better. Everyone's getting better. The next generation looks like it's come in with a purpose. And, you know, and they're winning important games. And that Gold Cup was one of the more phenomenal achievements because that was a very good Mexican team. A very prepared Mexican team, and the U.S. teams, not only are they young, they haven't played with each other, and they went out and they won, and they grew into that game. It was phenomenal to see when you see compare both tournaments, the Nations League and the Gold Cup, and now all of a sudden you have a very prepared and a very motivated player pool that's 50 deep. I mean, because you had some players that weren't even in the pool that weren't even part of both tournaments. So, I mean, wow, Berhalter has a lot to choose from right now.
So let's talk about Greg Berhalter. And we remember when the U.S. national team didn't qualify right away, Dave Sarakin took the team and started playing younger players. So not qualifying really did accelerate this process. And it's always tough moving on great, you know, legendary national team players that have had so many wonderful, indelible moments for the team. But let's strictly go back to this Gold Cup roster and some of the players that really grew in the eyes of the American soccer public. Miles Robinson, Matt Turner, Kalyn Acosta, a bit of a rebirth. Talk a little bit about what you saw and whose stock really rose for you.
Yeah, I mean, those three. Matt Turner, obviously. You're talking about the three goalkeepers with Zach Steffen and Ethan Horvath, but Matt Turner is the only one playing regularly. Zach Steffen's backup at one of the best teams of the world. And Ethan Horvath is trying to make his way at Nottingham Forest, but Matt Turner looks like, he could be trusted right now and not have to deal with any rust because he's playing regularly. So he has that to his benefit. Miles Robinson is just, athletically so gifted. He can bail out other teammates' mistakes just with his sheer athleticism to get in the good positions alone. And then obviously we see his aerial ability too. And Kellen Acosta, one of the big concerns for the national team over the last couple of years is, okay, you have Tyler Adams in number six, but who backs up Tyler Adams? Who can play that position? Because this World Cup qualifying format is so different than others because you have three games in a window, right? So now all of a sudden you're playing three games every other day, or every 3 days you have a game, and you're not going to be able to start everyone every single game. So now they have another option there at the number six, because everything on the U.S. team flows through that number six position. When Tyler has that's such a key distributor and key link between the defense and the attack, you know. And I thought those players that you mentioned were very good. I think Sam Vines has a real good chance to be a backup left back, maybe behind Anthony Robinson or Serginho Dest. He has to be considered. And then you have other guys like Gianluca Buzio and Eric Williamson as holding midfielders. They're doing very well. And Giassi Zardes looked the part as well. But he's been around for a long time, but you know, he was a handful to defend even when he wasn't scoring goals. So there was a lot to take away from this tournament with far more positives than negatives.
Talking to Brian Schiretta, American Soccer Now. Let me take you back to Miles Robinson. The other thing I liked about him that you didn't mention was the composure and demeanor he has as a center back. Mm-hmm. I absolutely love that part of it, to add into all the wonderful things you had said about his game. Take me a little deeper into Miles now.
Yeah, I mean, in his center back partner, James Sands, too, you can say the same thing. But, like, look, when you're looking at this tournament, particularly when you got into the knockout stages after Walker Zimmerman was forced to leave, you know, Miles only had three caps coming into this tournament. Sands, Pines, and Kessler had zero coming into this tournament. So, but that was your center back. That was your center back, you know, that was the four center backs you had on the roster. And Miles was the only guy who had any kind of caps. So despite only having three, he took the leadership role in that back line and, calmed things down. They never looked panicked. They never looked flustered. They never looked like everything was about ready to cave in on him. I think Miles, was good with his distribution, getting the ball forward, being proactive with it too. And then also working with his even more inexperienced, center back partners, and particularly helping guide James Sands through that difficult of a transition too. And I thought James had a good tournament, but Miles was clearly a step above and you're right. It's the composure mixed in with the athleticism and the strength and the aerial ability and the dueling and the smart decisions. So, I mean, I don't know how many cards he got, but you know, he was never reckless out there. So it was an important performance right now too, because now, I mean, he looked like a player you can just send out there and trust. He was that good and solid and composed in the back.
Now, maybe not as trusting, but a guy also who was able to fight through the tournament, made some mistakes, recovered from them, was getting run around a little bit by Funes Mori inside the box a bit. James Sands, you talked about him. He was a little shaky against Qatar. He had some shaky moments earlier in the final against Mexico, again, like up against Funes Mori, the Mexican striker, but recovered beautifully, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, he's a little younger. He doesn't have the athleticism Miles has he really has to get through things. He doesn't have the ability to bail himself out sometimes of poor positioning or maybe some other decision making that Miles can get away with. You know, James really can't. So, he has to outsmart everything every step of the way, be step ahead of everybody. And then when you go against a more experienced team, like Mexico, maybe perhaps at the youth national team, he could get away with it. But like when you're dealing with guys who've seen it all and play the game at a high level, it becomes tough and becomes challenging. So in that respect, you know, I think it was a very big learning curve for James, and I think he passed it. I mean, look, the U.S. team didn't allow one goal from the run of play. The only goal they allowed was a silly penalty against Martinique. So everyone in the defensive end really has to, pick their head up and congratulate each other and say, well done. I mean, they got everything they needed to do done. And that includes James. But, you know, when Walker went down, I didn't think that was what they did was going to even be possible, particularly in the knockout rounds. But they did it well. But still, yeah, James Sands is certainly in the mix. Do I think he's going to get a call up for qualifiers? I think it's going to be tough when you look at the whole center back pool. I think Miles will. He's going to be back next month. But, James is certainly one for the future and certainly one who I don't think we've seen the last of, but I don't know when the next time will be.
Ryan Chereda, American Soccer Now, joining us here on Soccer Matters, as always presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. And look, when the critical save had to be made, Matt Turner was outstanding. Goalkeeper of the tournament, 26 saves, 5 shutouts when he was called into duty. Exceptional. And he just is a remarkable story. I mean, come on, this guy picked the game up at 16 or 17 years of age. It really is a remarkable story.
Yeah, I mean, he was, here in New Jersey, went to St. Joe's, Montvale, and he wasn't even taking his own goal kicks throughout high school because he didn't really know how to do it that well. He was just, just put on some gloves and was just trying to reaction, was not technically taught the game until college, when he learned how to play with the ball at his feet and help in the defense in that regard, too. And then, and then he was just hoping to get a trial for one of the New York teams, and that never came through. Then eventually, I guess, the Revolution gave him a trial and everything worked out well there too, but I mean, it's just been so impressive what he's done and how he's grown into the game. So I'm thinking, he's obviously the U.S. team knows their three goalkeepers for the rest of the cycle. He's one of them, but in terms of placement, if he's playing every day, and the other guys struggle a little bit, I think he could get some big moments at some big opportunities lying ahead, and he might be the guy that they trust the most if the situation doesn't improve for the other guys at the club level, because goalkeeping, it's all about staying in rhythm, and Matt has that he has the benefit of that, although who knows, European teams could be circling around any of these guys.
Now, back to Zach Steffen. Do you think he's going to stay at Manchester City and deputize there with Pep Guardiola?
For now, yeah, I think he will. I think they like him, and there's always a chance that to have a good, dependable backup. When you're dealing with a club that has that much money and that much finance, they're so strong. Like they want to have a good backup goalkeeper. They don't want to see them having to go to an untested backup if it's ever necessary. They want to be able to be covered at all positions and go, go deep, 2 or 3 deep everywhere across the field. And that includes Zach, but, he knew that going in that this is what happens when you sign with the biggest teams in the world. Playing time is not always assured, and it's very tough to come by. Getting the contract is only the first part of the battle to seeing the field. And obviously, at the goalkeeper position, there's not much turnover, but I think he'll still be part of the FA Cup and League
Cup. So you think he'll get enough games? He'll get enough games to remain the number one. In other words, if you're Greg Berhalter, are you going to pick a Matt Turner who's playing consistently in MLS or somebody who's playing in FA Cup for Manchester City?
I think for some goalkeepers, for some managers, I'm sorry, it wouldn't be enough. But look, Greg goes a long way back with Zach to the crew. And I think that there's a trust there that those two have, that predates, Greg's time on the national team. So look, Zach's gonna have to make mistakes, I think, really for the switch to happen. But if that happens, then yeah, he might go with Turner over Horvath or whoever's playing regularly. Yeah, I think it's gonna be Stefan's job right now for the national team.
And this is all subjective kind of foreshadowing type of talk here. The bottom line is you got a bunch of good goalkeepers. I think the one that would have to be most concerned is Brad Guzan right now, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think Brad knows these times. Like this is, goalkeepers get phased out at a certain time too. And the fact that he didn't play in this tournament, I think he can read the writing on the wall. But he's also comfortable in his own career and knows that this is just the phase he's in. It was, I remember when Marcus Hanneman was the third goalkeeper, and he was starting in the Premier League, it's sometimes, but there was a lot, but like it left Nick Raimondo out for all those years. So, Guzan's, had his chances, had his time, but yeah, I think he's probably on the outside looking in.
Has had a great career, Atlanta United, Brad Guzan. All right, let's go to Greg Berhalter. We do need to talk about him and how he guided this team. He's looking like a shining star right now. He did it twice against Tata Martino, and he was a guy I know I talked to you about. I couldn't believe that U.S. Soccer never interviewed Tata Martino. So Greg Berhalter deserves incredible credit here for kind of guiding this group of guys. It seems like there is a great connection between coach and players.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at Mexico, now they got doubt because they were like wondering, how do we beat this U.S. team? And we threw everything we had at them, two different teams, and Berhalter seemed to find the best way. Now all of a sudden Berhalter's armed with a player pool that's 50 deep and ready for it. Now all of a sudden there's challenges with that, having a deep player pool. How do you keep them all content and interested and not disgruntled? And, you know, and that's problems for another day. But for now, he's prepared.
But Brian, that's called a champagne problem.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and now, but you know, and then on the flip side of it, I guess sour prune juice would be like what Mexico has is like, do the players trust the manager? They wonder, you know, what is it going to take to get? I mean, because Mexico struggled to, not just against the U.S. Like, I didn't think they were going to get by Canada after Canada equalized that game. I thought they had problems against El Salvador. So, you know, if I'm Mexico, I mean, do you trust Tata? I mean, I think changing managers as quickly as they do has its own detriment. But at the flip side, too, do you want to be having these questions a month out from qualifying?
Yeah, I can't see them changing managers. I mean, look, if they had a rough qualifying start, okay, in comes the Mexican Federation. But, you know, they're hoping for the return of Raul Jimenez. There's a number of guys, you know, that were away with the Olympic team, like Diego Lainez, Guillermo Ochoa. There's a whole bunch of people that they're hoping to get back into the fold, Chucky Lozano as well. So, but look, this was a team, to your point, that had Hector Moreno, Hector Herrera, Tecatito Corona, a lot of very experienced players, far more experienced than the U.S. So there is no question. This is significant. Doesn't it feel amazing to kind of be in the position that the United States is in now, where we remember when Mexico would bring B teams to tournaments, and now it's the U.S. who did it?
Oh yeah, I mean, look, it was always a measuring stick, right? I mean, it was the only time the U.S. got to play meaningful games outside the World Cup was against Mexico, but now it's the U.S. is on the upswing. And the thing is that I don't see it changing anytime soon. It's like, this is not you can't look at this as a golden generation for the United States. I mean, when you look at, the guys Pulisic and McKennie and Dest and Adams and Reyna, there's more coming, and there's more coming at a regular stream, you know, and that's got to, and Mexico knows it too. That's why they're going after every Mexican-American player. I know, they're approaching these players too, because look, the development in this country is good. It's changing, and the U.S. can't rest on their laurels because things can change back. But right now, the U.S. is in a good shape, not just now, not just in the short-term future, but the long-term future as well.
How much of this has to do with, MLS academies and the growth of player development under the pressure and the guise of MLS?
I think it's enormous. I mean, just look at – if you combine the – players that have come out of the Red Bull Academy, the Philadelphia Union Academy, and the Dallas Academy. You can form a really good U.S. national team just based on those players alone. And and now all of a sudden more teams are starting to join those folds and produce, and they're starting to come from all over. And everyone kind of sees that now too. I mean, these developmental channels in this country are so important. And the fact that MLS is selling players mean that they're attracting the best talent in this country at a younger ages too, because this is a good place to start your career, and that you go over to Europe more prepared, and the clubs that want you. I mean, if a team spends $5 to $10 million for you, you're going to play. I mean, it's just they're going to want to see what they got, so you're going to get a fair chance. So it's all that stuff is they invested a lot of money in these academies. It took some while for it to bear fruit, but it seems to be kind of a steady stream right now, and I think that's that's a big, big reason of why the U.S. team is so deep and so good right now.
Brian Schroeder joining us, American Soccer Now. You got 45 seconds. Talk to me about Matthew Hoppe's performance in the tournament.
Learning experience. I think he showed swagger and aggressiveness and all that stuff that was healthy. Couple things there. He dribbled into trouble too much. He got himself into trouble and looked for refs to bail him out. So there are some things he has to work on. I wouldn't trade that attitude or the swagger for anything. I think that's going to be a big thing that carries him forward, and he's only going to get better because the U.S. needs that kind of an attitude out there on the field. It looked like Clint Dempsey, attitude-wise. So I like it, even if he has some things he has to work on.
Brian, as always, thank you so much for coming on the show. Great stuff.
Anytime, Glenn.
All right, Brian Ciaretta, American Soccer Now. He's up on it. Great stuff there on Matthew Hoppe to finish that interview. Quick word here for Advantage BMW. I've leased, I've bought from Advantage numerous times. And that's Advantage BMW Midtown. I love the drive of a BMW. If you go into Advantage BMW Midtown, you get in the 3, a 5 series, get in an X5, and get in the SUVs. But you go down there, you talk to Justin, you talk to Steven. The other thing is the customer service is amazing. I'm not the guy who gets under the hood of a car. Advantage BMW has you covered. They'll take you through sales, service, and finance. It can be done so easy. It's Advantage BMW Midtown. Get in a 3, get in a 5, get in a 7 Series, get in an X5 SUV-type vehicle. It's Advantage BMW Midtown. Proud sponsors of Soccer Matters here. And as always, thank you, Advantage BMW Midtown. We'll take a break. We've got more to come.
ESPN 975 and ESPN 925. Real. Let's go. Fun. Sports.
I'm Greg Berhalter. You're listening to Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis on ESPN 97.5.
All right, we continue on here on Soccer Matters. And, of course, we know on Wednesday night the Houston Dynamo will take on Austin FC. This will be a historic match. There's no question about it. Q2 Stadium, I've had the pleasure of going up there once. It is off the charts. Excitement. This will be a night where the backdrop is going to be incredible. This segment is brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, our presenting sponsors. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys. You get in an accident, car, boat, motorcycle. You might drive an 18-wheeler. You might work in a refinery. John and his firm are going to work for you 24/7, nights and weekends. DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-HURT. They're bilingual, 713-322-HURT. By the way, they're also the presenting sponsors of our show in Austin, Soccer Matters, which airs on The Horn. And this gentleman has been on that show. Now he's making his Houston debut. He is the enemy. Nah, he's not. We're welcoming. He is Jeremiah Bentley of the Moon Tower podcast and really does follow Austin FC with a lot of insight. Jeremiah, welcome to the show.
Hey, Glenn. Thanks for having me on. I'm happy to appear in a different city somehow through the miracle of Zoom, right?
Hey, we're taking you on tour like the Rolling Stones. We're everywhere we branch out with Soccer Matters, you're coming with us. All right, baby?
I love it.
All right, let's get into it, Jeremiah. The first thing I do want an Austin perspective for my listeners as well here in Houston and vice versa. How frustrated is this club with the lack of goal scoring? How do you think their response to the fans have been? You know, I get the whole thing. We stick to it. We keep doing what we're doing. But, you know, where is it from the perspective of the fan and you as a podcast host?
Yeah, I think as a fan – being with all the excitement that's been generated up and with this being the first season that I think obviously we're a little bit more lenient than we might be otherwise if we were further into it, but I can definitely feel the frustration build. And I feel in the stands, you know, for the Colorado match, you could just sort of feel that anxiety way that in a way that we didn't against San Jose or against Columbus, you know, which again, were, you know, low scoring affairs, you know, without a lot of offense, but I think it's something that's built on top of itself, we're just looking forward to, you know, standing and cheering and chanting and trying to cheer the club out of it because we can't control what's on the field.
Now, do you notice any of the fan base losing a little bit of patience with it, or is it still pretty much, hey, look, it's our first year? And by the way, your organization's reacting with Sebastian Driussi, the Argentine, who's going to come at about a $7 million price tag. So, what do you think? Do you think there are some that are fading a little bit out and healthy criticism?
I think there's healthy criticism. And I think, you know, the person who just sees Q2 Stadium as the biggest party in town and maybe wasn't that really connected to that team, are they a little less excited? Sure. You know, I mean, I'm in the supporter section. Everybody around me is just as enthusiastic as they were day one. I mean, we're still not over the excitement of having a team period, but I think you see a little bit less enthusiasm when we're down, just sort of among the broader stands as a whole.
Jeremiah Bentley joining us, Moon Tower Podcast. Jeremiah, let's talk a little about Sebastian Driussi. I guess we're getting word he's not expected to play tomorrow night against the Houston Dynamo, probably makes his debut against FC Dallas. I would assume that's accelerated strictly because of the goal-scoring problems. But how excited are you that you have an organization that reacts that quickly to obviously what is a very specific need?
Yeah, it was great to see that commitment. It was Claudio Reyna all along has said that they were going to sign Cecilio and they were going to sign Pochettino and that they would wait until the summer and wait to see what the greatest position of need was to bring in the third DP. And so I think we had built a lot of anxiety up, right? Because it's one thing for Claudio to say that, but you know, it didn't come to pass and it didn't come to pass. And this window has been open for a couple weeks. And then, you know, to see that signing and to see them follow through on that commitment really got everybody all fired up again, which made for a way, it was a way more exciting week last week than it might have been otherwise based upon the results because of the Driussi signing, because it's a, like you said, it's a multi-million dollar commitment and it shows a real push toward fixing what is clearly the biggest issue that the club has right now.
Yeah, and it's obviously a guy that they've been tracking and working on to pull it off this quickly is pretty phenomenal. Cecilio Pochettino, Rodney Redis, is there some disappointment in the performances of some of these guys just based on strictly the numbers? You know, Jared Stroud, I mean, we all know they're good players. We all know they're workers. We all know they're a part of the system. Yet on the other hand, player performance is part of it.
Right. And I think you can break those up into sort of two categories. So, I mean, I think Redis has no doubt been a disappointment and probably if we had other options as a guy you wouldn't see on the field a lot, but Cecilio and Pochettino have been put to play in positions that they're not the best suited for, right? Cecilio's not a number nine. Cecilio's a winger, you know, and he's being asked to do things that he's not normally responsible for. And same with Pochettino. He was like a deep lying playmaker in Argentina. So for me, the most exciting thing about Driussi comes in is it moves the pieces around the chessboard so that Cecilio's not playing that false nine position. He's back on the wing where he's most comfortable. Pochettino can slide back a little bit. Fagundes can slide in. So I think it's not only just this one signing, but the way that it affects the entire attack and allows people to maximize that makes the Driussi signing even greater than he is just as a player by himself.
Well, that's a great point because it gets people back to the areas they play best. Now, you also, I would say, you have to consider Josh Wolf's trying all kinds of different things, right? That's why he's playing Cecilio with his back to goal. He probably knows that's not ideal, but he's just trying to come up with answers, whether it's a slight tactical tweak, moving people positionally, but he just hasn't gotten the goals. I got to say, though, Diego Fagundes, as far as a guy jumping out of midfield and getting into the attack, he deserves a lot of credit, and I think his career has been revitalized in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I do too, and we love him, right? I mean, he was one of the first guys to come in. He's been super connected to the community. You know, he's played foot golf with fans. He's gone go-kart riding with fans. Like, he brings his kids over. He's just – and for a person to be that good of a person and then also to play the way he's played and just run his heart out and leave it all on the field has been incredible. I mean, his best game was the Portland game because he was all over the place. He was able to draw players away and attack and help us execute. And that was also the last game we had a healthy Danny Pereira. So I think, you know, again, there's two stories here. There is – the lack of production and there's like the lack of health in the attack too. And hopefully we heard this afternoon that Pereira will be back in some capacity versus Houston. So if you add him back in and you add Driussi back in, I think it's a whole different team.
Boy, it becomes a lot more competitive. I mean, who's going to lose out with Sebastian Driussi when it comes to playing time?
Yeah. Somebody's got to lose minutes. I think it's some combination of probably Pochettino, Pereira and Fagundes, which is fine. Cause we're playing two games a week. And they are running themselves ragged right now. It'd be nice to be able to make a tactical sub and not just that guy's falling down on the field and can't get up, so we have to bring somebody else in.
Yeah, and it's the second of three games this week for both the Houston Dynamo and Austin FC. All right, the lack of goal scoring, because I'm watching all the Austin FC games, and a lot of these games, they don't have a problem getting into the attacking third. And there is some fluid, wonderful play. Then they get into the final third, and yeah, you know, what do you put it down to? Decision-making, movement, lack of finishing, great goalkeeping, luck. You almost got to say maybe it's an amalgamation of all that.
Some combination. I feel like the decision making is one. Somebody said it was like a, it's like a choose your own adventure game, and they pick the wrong option every single time. Yeah, they shoot when they should pass, and they pass and they should shoot, and they end up getting eaten by the dragon or whatever it is, like at the end of those books. Yeah, and then they're not challenging on runs in a way that it seems like they should be. And I don't know if that's coaching or what, but I think decision making first, and then sort of just spacing and movement is probably the second biggest challenge that we have.
Yeah, that's a good call. We're talking to Jeremiah Bentley, Moon Tower Podcast up in Austin. I suggest you listen to it. Austin FC comes into this 3-8-4 on 13 points. They're only 8 points out of a playoff spot. The Dynamo 3-4-9. They're only 3 points out of a playoff spot. So per Major League Soccer, you are in it till the end, and the Dynamo and Austin FC are. And it does allow you to delay making choices here, like, you know, this situation with Sebastian Drewisi, who is going to clearly be expected to accelerate things very quickly.
Yeah, it is. And you're right. I mean, it's a league that, but for both of these teams, as much as there's a must-win game, it's kind of a must-win game, right? I mean, because there's one or two spots that are open at the bottom of the playoff bracket, and Houston, Dallas, and Austin, all three want to be competing for it. And this is the kind of game you got to win to make a difference.
Another note here, you know, it is kind of interesting because the Dynamo are missing a real sort of creative fulcrum to make them more dangerous out of midfield, either via the pass, off the dribble. And they're looking at a potential deal with a guy named Adalberto Carrasquilla, who's a Panamanian who's been playing in Spain, second division, was once looked at for Real Madrid B. So that's something to keep an eye on here in the future. But I kind of find it, in some ways, kind of an interesting comparison that both teams are struggling attacking-wise. But the Dynamo, Jeremiah, are a much better defensive team now with the DP signing of Teenage Adebi. They were better at the beginning of the season. They are night and day better than last year. And I think we got to begin to think of the Dynamo as a defending team now up against an Austin FC that's struggling to score goals.
Yeah, so if I was a betting man, you might bet on a 0-0 or 1-0, right? Like, I don't see Austin, right, you're right, with the way Houston's playing. I don't see Austin pouring in a lot of goals. And I hope Brad Stuver continues to play the way he's playing, because he's kept Austin competitive in some games that maybe they should not have necessarily been.
I mean, he's the fan favorite now, right? I mean, I love when he makes a save and the whole crowd goes, Stu, you know, and there's that wave of his name being said. It's fantastic.
Yeah, and he's one too, along with Diego, that always kind of stop by a supporter section after the game, win, lose, no matter what, and sort of acknowledge the fans. And so that's made him a favorite here also.
Is your MVP him or Alex Ring at this point of the season? Because this will be the halfway point after Wednesday night.
I think it has to be Stuver. You know, we haven't lost by, no matter how bad the offense has been, we haven't lost by more than two goals yet. We haven't gotten blown out, and Brad Stuver is the biggest single contributor to that. So hopefully we'll see him in an all-star game. We'll see.
Yeah, he's been fantastic. Now, Alexander Ring, though, you got to give him a lot of credit too, right? I mean, would he be the second?
Yeah, he would be second right now, for sure. And he does all the, you know, you don't want to notice him a lot, right? Because he's stepping in, he's making the critical passes from the back to build things out. You know, he's making the stops, and he's, the less visible he is, the better, because he just goes about his job and does his job. I mean, he's team captain too, you know, so he's a vocal leader for sure in the locker room in the ways that we don't necessarily see. But I think those two guys have really carried the team and carried the back line, because I don't know that the defensive back line is really as talented as they've shown. And I think they're held up a little bit by the way Ring and Stuver have played.
Yeah, protecting him on either end. All right, so let's talk about the Dynamo pressing game up against your Austin FC back four, Komanich, Biesler, Cascante, and Jimenez, if that's the way they start. I'm sure a couple of those guys will be correct. What do you think about that?
I think Austin has trouble with speed. We talked about this before we came, you know, before I came on, but I was very happy to not see Arruti after we saw him sort of torch Julio Cascante in the preseason. So I think if Houston can, I think it's what Houston's got to look for, right? If Houston, that's how Austin got beat against last week against Colorado, was just Michael Barrios, a really, really fast guy that can run past the center backs because they can't afford to be out of position. So I think if I was Houston, that's what I'd look to exploit.
Yeah, and the Dynamo are getting guys back from the Gold Cup. Obviously, the Rudy's out, but Fafa Pico will be available for selection, Tyler Pascher. And they've also signed Corey Baird, who's you know, a guy that is a nonstop runner and mover. So this will be a very interesting area to look at when it comes to Austin FC and the Houston Dynamo. What are some of your thoughts on the Dynamo overall from the outside looking in?
Yeah, I think it looks like the Dynamo are doing everything right to build off of what happened last season, which obviously was very disappointing. But and they seem to have the right coach. I felt like all the moves that they made in the offseason, you know, seem to be the right ones. You know, it's because there's such parity in the league, it's sort of a slow process to build, right? Because you can't just go out and make wholesale changes and bring in seven new players from all over Europe. But it's definitely a team on the rise. And I think a team that they can threaten in the Western Conference if everything comes together.
Jeremiah Bentley, the Boone Tower podcast up in Austin. We're talking Austin FC, Houston Dynamo again this game Wednesday night. Houston, it'll be a 7:30 pregame show on Channel 55. Join Eddie Robinson and myself. Game will kick a little bit after 8 o'clock. We're looking forward to this. And there is a historic perspective to this one, Jeremiah. Does the fan base up in Austin have anything special planned for this since it's sort of the first rivalry match against either a Houston or a Dallas?
Yeah, so this would be the first Copetejas game, which is something that the fans of Houston, Dallas, and Austin put together jointly to not take away from the cannon. What's the cannon? El Capitan?
Yes.
You know, that's a Houston and Dallas thing, and we all wanted to respect that. And so this will be the first for Austin. We'll get our first two Copa matches in the same week because we've got Houston and Austin this week and then on Dallas this weekend. So we expect to see we've got friends from the supporters group, this group's in Houston coming up and hanging out before the game. You know, we want to be really hospitable right up until 8:05 or whatever, and then sort of hate each other for 90 minutes and then share beers together after that. So I think it'll be a big deal for the fans. And I think, you know, we'll be up for that in a way that we wouldn't necessarily have given recent results because it's Houston, because it's an in-state game, and because it's our first in-state rivalry game.
Yeah, do you think these two in-state rivalry games could be the impetus to kind of get the best out of Austin FC?
I think it could be. I think it should be. For the fans and for the club, you know, to thrive off that passion, to build up this, we're going to see each other a bunch, right, between now and the end of the year and then on down the road. So that's what it takes to make a real rivalry, right, is that experience and that the knowledge of each other and sort of, you know, wanting to, I think everybody from any of these three cities sort of wants to think that their city's the best and pick at the other two little brothers, whoever they are.
Well, Jeremiah, listen, great stuff. Thank you for coming on. You're always very insightful, and it's great to get the perspective of Austin FC this time on the Houston version of Soccer Matters. So always appreciate it. Again, it's Jeremiah Bentley. You can catch him with his partner, Landon Cotham, on the Moon Tower podcast. Those guys host the show, host the podcast. And Jeremiah, have a great time at the game Wednesday. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Glenn. Really appreciate it.
All right, there's Jeremiah Bentley. Away he goes. We'll go to a commercial break here. First, we'll just remind you that Advantage BMW in Midtown, it's a great place to go. Get down there, see my buddy Justin, see my buddy Steven. I bought from Advantage BMW Midtown numerous times. Incredible machines. They will cover you sales, service, finance. It can be done so easy. It is Advantage BMW Midtown, and they're proud sponsors of Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. We'll come back with more.
My sideburns low with my New York brim and my gold tooth display. Nobody give me trouble because they know I got it. Me. I'm bad. I'm nationwide.
ESPN 97.5. You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. We roll on here tonight. As we mentioned, a very, very big game against Austin FC. Tomorrow night, you can catch the game on Channel 55. Dynamo visiting the Q2 Stadium for the first time ever. This is a historic match. No better guy to bring on than the head coach of the Houston Dynamo. He's Tab Ramos. Tab, thank you as always for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me on.
Well, there is a historic nature to this one. I don't think there's any question playing up in Austin now that we have three MLS teams in the state. I'm sure that's not lost on you and your players.
Oh, no, for sure. We know the magnitude of the game. Obviously, because it's a rivalry and because it will always be a big game from now on forever, I hope. But obviously, being the first game is a little bit more special, getting an opportunity to go into their stadium for the first time. Yeah, it's a good moment that we should enjoy. And obviously, you know, the situation that we're in and the way we're playing, you know, we're looking forward to going there and hopefully getting a good result.
Tab, how about some thoughts on Austin FC, what you've seen from Josh Wolf and the team assembled by Claudio Reyna?
Yeah, I mean, I like, obviously, they have players that can make a difference. You know, they put a lot of their money up front, obviously, and, you know, players, you know, Dominguez is a player that worries us, you know. Fagundes is a player that's having a really good season, and he also is one we have to worry about. And then you have Pochettino, who's a very consistent, you know, number eight, back and forth, box to box. You know, Ring does the same, a lot of recovery in the middle of the field. I think those guys have been the guys that have been sort of keeping that team together. And then we'll see, you know, what are the rotations, what guys they bring in and out of the lineup. But we know that those guys are the ones we, at the moment, we have to focus on the most.
Do you feel a little bit for Josh Wolf as a new coach in Major League Soccer and the fact that they're struggling so much to score goals? I mean, they've been shut out repeatedly.
It's hard to tell, you know, from looking at it from the other side. You never know what struggles a coach has every day. You know, scoring goals can be difficult. You know, having a new team in the league can be difficult. But I think it all, you know, depends on the goals of the team. I know that, you know, they're probably building the team slowly, looking into the future. I know they made some big investments, and I'm sure they're looking forward to getting some return fairly quickly.
Tab Ramos, head coach of the Houston Dynamo, joining us again. The Dynamo in action tomorrow night, 7:30 pregame show. It's Channel 55, Dynamo on the road at Austin FC. Expect to see a few orange jerseys up there as well in the new Q2 stadium. Pressing game is something Josh Wolf likes, Tab. Obviously, you do. Does this look like a team you can produce chances off the press on the road?
I think we can. You know, I'm confident that we can produce chances against any team. And so for me, Austin would just be another team, you know, that we play, that you know, that we certainly have to be careful with, but one that I think we can also create chances against.
Tab, Fafapiko will be available for selection in this game. That's got to be good news to you with the number of guys out due to the protocol and just trying to get your team back together after the Gold Cup.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a weird week, you know, having a few guys out and all on the attacking side, really. And at the same time, then adding Corey basically the same day we had our last game. So there's some big decisions for us to make going into tomorrow on whether, you know, number one, whether Fav is ready. Number two, whether, you know, Corey is ready to get a start. And then the third one would be Tyler. You know, Tyler was away with Canada for a full month, in which he didn't get many minutes. And so we have to monitor that as well. So we have a lot of big decisions to make over the next 24 hours. But you know, it's good when you get to decide amongst good players. Those are all good players we're talking about.
Tab, between now and the last game against RSL, has a lot of this been about assessing kind of some of the guys coming back to the team? Because, like you said, Tyler Pascher had limited minutes, maybe less than 40 minutes in the Gold Cup.
Yeah, that's the difficult part. You know, he had limited minutes and he played a really hard 30, 35 minutes the other day, in which he was pretty spent after that. We also have to consider the fact that Griffin Dorsey has done a great job. I mean, you know, here's a player that we added just a month ago that, you know, that sort of Toronto let go. And it's a player that I knew well. And I think, you know, in the last two games away at San Jose and at home against RSL, you know, he was one of our better players. And we have to be honest with that assessment. And he's one that also deserves an opportunity to play.
Difficult choices. Dynamo getting set, as we mentioned, Austin FC on Wednesday, and then the Dynamo turn around and go to Minnesota. So it's three games in 8 days. How are your guys physically weathering everything in your mind?
Well, I mean, I think, unfortunately, you know, having a couple guys out hurts, but I think we're getting to the point where if you just, you know, you know, we talk about those four guys that we just mentioned, and then we add Memo to the picture, you know, we're starting to have some options on the attacking side. And the team is starting to become more competitive. So I think in, you know, 2-3 weeks from now, I think having all these guys on the field every day competing for a spot will make this team much, much better.
How tough is it to be without Maxi or Rudy?
It's difficult because Maxi has been not only our leading scorer, but just our leader in general. You know, he has great charisma on the field and off the field. He's one that players, tend to follow and somebody that frankly we really need. So, at the moment the team has to grow with the guys that we have, and we're looking forward to that. And we certainly are not making any excuses for who's not here, because I always see that as the opportunities for guys who are here.
Tab, watching the Gold Cup, we saw the U.S. with a late dramatic win, a fantastic set piece, Acosta to Miles Robinson. Set pieces have not been as effective for you guys and corners. And obviously, you know, when we look at the draws, you're going, you know, you pick off a couple of those wins with set pieces and you got another 6-9 points maybe. It's easy for me to say on the outside, but is that an area you're working on? Because you obviously have guys that could execute. You got guys who can attack the ball in the air with Teenage and Tim Parker and others. Is that an area where you're really working on improving?
Well, I mean, I think that's a great question. And I don't know if maybe you should be coaching because, you know, this is exactly what we worked on today. That was something that we feel exactly the same. You know, we've been in a lot of tied games. I think most of them we should have won. A few we probably should have lost. That's a fact, you know, that a set piece can make a huge difference. And we worked a lot on that today because we have to get better on those. So those can make all the difference in the world between being a playoff team and not being a playoff team, regardless of how we play.
So do you think from back in like 80s and 90s and your day, and of course a little bit in my day, it seemed like we were trying to stay away from the goal and get a run at the delivery. And it's different now with all the clutching and grabbing. Do you think it's more difficult for guys like Tim Parker and some of the big center backs to pick off a couple goals a year in seasons?
Well, you know, I can think of Marcelo Balboa and all the goals he scored, you know, headers, bicycle kicks, whatever. Yeah. You know, he was always getting his head on the ball. It is more difficult now. I think just in general, the game is a lot more athletic now. So everybody in the box can actually go for the ball. And everybody can mark much better than in the past as well. So it is more difficult now. There's no question.
Tab, what about the strike Matias Vera had in San Jose? I mean, absolutely gorgeous goal. Only goal you've had outside the 18. Is that another thing you're working on, is being more goal dangerous from longer range, maybe in some instances?
I mean, not necessarily. It's, you know, obviously we work on shooting as much as we can whenever we're allowed from the high performance standpoint, so that we don't bury our guys' legs, you know. So there's only certain days that you can do shooting, but these things happen in the game. We know that Memo has a great shot from the outside. We know that Joe has a great shot from the outside. We know that Ruti does as well. And most of his goals are, if not from outside the box, they're right from the top of the box. So he does get into those spots. So we know, you know, that doesn't worry me. I know we can get goals from outside the box.
Hey, that was interesting what you just said about high performance, because that definitely didn't exist when I played. So let's talk about high performance and what you just mentioned, because you said you limited the days of shooting. Can you take us into that a little bit deeper?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty simple. You know, there's only so much load that you can put into players' legs throughout the week. And, you know, whether that's including, you know, the total meters they run or the total sprints they have or the high speed running that they have. On top of it, if you add to that, you know, 50, 60 shots on goal, you know, that's a lot of power that the legs are using in any one day. So you have to be really careful. You know, the days of, you know, staying after practice and taking 100 free kicks, you know, that they're not around anymore. You have to be really selective on when you can allow players to do that, unfortunately, and pick your moments, because, you know, every effort that they make counts. You know, this league is really difficult because we travel a lot and we use a lot of energy just in travel alone. So we try to be as careful as we can.
about habitually when you used to train? Is that something you used to do? Take hundreds and hundreds of shots after training? And I mean, was that part of your mantra?
Yeah, really. I had no idea about anything else. All I knew was just shooting a goal and things like that. So, yeah, of course, I stayed after shooting all the time.
Zab Ramos joining us here ahead of Austin FC. Again, we're going to remind you, you can catch it on Channel 55. Tune in. This is a historic match, which will set in motion a rivalry that will continue for many, many years. Before we let you go, Tab, let's just talk a little bit about that wonderful Gold Cup, a very prideful performance from a young U.S. group of guys. How did that resonate with you?
You know, I couldn't be happier, you know, seeing in particular because some of the, let's say, bigger names were not there at this Gold Cup. And U.S. was really able to showcase the amount of different talent that we have in all the younger age groups. And this is something, you know, that I've mentioned over the last couple of days as this happened, is the fact that, you know, in 2018, when our team didn't qualify, in 2017, when our World Cup team, our team didn't qualify to the World Cup, a lot of people say, you know, a lot of the pundits out there, in TV personality said, you know, we have to blow up the system. Nothing works. It starts with the youth. And I remember saying at the time is there's nothing wrong with the youth. We have great players at the youth. You know, the fact that the senior team didn't qualify, it's maybe because the senior team didn't get turned over at the right time with younger talent. But the talent was here. You know, we were going, you know, World Cup after World Cup, we were going to quarterfinals at the U-20s. We were champions of CONCACAF time and time again. So the talent was there, and now the talent is actually showing. You know, the players have been given an opportunity, and they're showing how competitive they are. So I'm very happy, in particular for the players and for the program as well, because the last 10 years there was a lot of work putting into the program, and I'm glad that U.S. soccer is getting the fruits of that.
And you've had a fingerprint on a lot of these players, including the ones that won the Gold Cup. Coming from you, that's a strong statement. The fact that the U.S. didn't qualify, though, probably accelerated the process for people to get opportunity? Young players?
There's no question, because even when Dave Sarakin took over the national team, the beginning was just to provide opportunities for younger players. That's where Weston McKinney started. That's where Tyler Adams got his chance. That's where a lot of those guys started, with Dave Sarakin, you know, opening the door to opportunity. And that's what U.S. soccer needed. And maybe we took a year too long to start to do that, but I think we paid the price for it, and now it's time to look forward.
Well, let's look forward to Austin FC on Wednesday night. That's a big one at Q2 Stadium. Tab, as always, we thank you for all the insight and getting us prepared for Wednesday night. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me on.
All right, we don't end in any better way than that. Houston Dynamo head coach Tab Ramos. Show, as always, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Podcast at ESPN975.com. For producer tonight, Tyler Scott, I'm Glenn Davis. Until next week, remember, soccer matters.
ESPN 97.5.